Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRue Show for Saturday, November 20th, 2010. I'm Marcia Mary Baker, and we'll be discussing today action to defeat the inter-alpha war against the world. And let me subtitle this, The Dope on Dope, Inc. In other words, Dope Incorporated, those networks about which a dynamite book was written in 1978, I believe it was published. That would be a generation ago, and I'm very glad to welcome among our three guests today, here live in the studio with me, Nancy Spanis. Welcome.
Thank you, Marsh.
Who was an editor of its many editions, I think perhaps along with Jeff Steinberg, who's the EIR counterintelligence desk. Right, Nancy?
Yes.
And this book is now in print again. We'll be coming to that, back to that many times and with detail. But I also am glad to welcome right now from the LaRouche Political Action Committee Houston office, two organizers leading the charge right now. We have Juliette Lamoureux with us. Welcome, Juliette.
Hello, thank you.
And Guillermo Granados. We often call him Memo, and are you there? And welcome, Memo.
Yep, thank you much.
And let me just say, I mentioned Dope Inc., the book, but on the networks that they are, this Dope Incorporated, as we called it in 1978, the book is out again, is that if you take this situation from the top, we are at war against these networks. And in the last 24 hours, Mr. Lyndon LaRouche has issued a call to arms, a declaration of war against them. The statement that he released is called Sink the Inter-Alpha Group, and he titled as he says, is tantamount to war, and he describes the situation we're in, and namely, take what's in the headlines about this so-called Irish bank crisis, or even describe worse, the Irish crisis. It's in fact, these networks that got their name, I guess they named themselves in 1971, a rather kind of formal, a loose but formal organization, the Inter-Alpha Group, they are making war on the nation of Ireland and the nation-state system itself, wanting Ireland to forego its sovereignty and just cave in and do anything that this group wants to back up their lousy, bankrupt banking, financial rip-off system. So we're going to discuss, we can discuss that in more detail, but let me just mention one detail that points up what Mr. LaRouche summarizes in the statement I just mentioned, which, by the way, is available in flyer form, leaflet form, whatever you want to call it, on the relevant website of his political action committee. That'd be LaRouchePAC.com. Nancy, is it on LaRouche Pub? It will be at some
It will
state.
Be.
Yeah.
So not too long from now.
On our own, LaRouchePub.com. But the thing is, if you take one thing, if you want some... if you want a concrete, take Thursday. One of the voices of this grouping, which is the City of London voice in the Financial Times, its editorial, I think, was saying, okay, there's going to be runs on banks. Some of the bigger ones, meaning their chosen ones, are going to survive. Others won't, and we have to have, they use the word technocratic, I think,
right,
arrangements, which is a polite parlor room term for we're going to do what we want to make peoples and nations give the blood money to back up anything we want to do. And that's the way it is. And that's their declaration of war. So what? Let me just say one more thing and then turn to Nancy to open the discussion. And that is, I think Mr. LaRouche has called, this seems like a long time away, another international webcast, January 22nd.
Right.
But it's at a special time of the new year. By then, even by next week, things are, at the rate things are going, everything changes fast. But keep that date in mind, January 22nd. And so, as I say, let's turn to Nancy in the sense that, as I said, in 1978, a generation ago, this book was issued, Dope Inc. And that isn't just a good read or something. Tell us about the impact and why you put it out then and what it means.
Well, let me start with today and then connect it with that, because what is really at the fundamental first thing that everyone has to understand, and those who don't are just blinding themselves, is that there is a British Empire. It is effectively ruling the world and has increasingly done so since 1971, which was the time when, through British machinations and agents and traders in the United States, the dollar was taken out of the Bretton Woods system, and happened to be the same time that this InterAlpha group, which you mentioned, was formed. That International British Empire, which is a nexus of banks associated with the British monarchy and encompassing what we call in Dope Incorporated the dope banks, the banks who officially, publicly, up until 1921, on the basis of the ideas of Adam Smith and other so-called economic thinkers, stinkers, made their money from the dope trade and subjecting nations around the world, most particularly China, most famously China, but also others, forced them to grow opium to give the rights of trade in opium to Britain to make enormous profits in order to shore them up. They did that publicly up to 1921. After 1921, they did it privately.
Yeah, and such places, Singapore and so forth. I remember, look, you published all the statement of accounts, the annual trade balance in dope, that just like in food or in cotton or in...
Right, in everything else. Now, having gone underground, so to speak, the banks are part of the nexus of financial institutions, which can only be accurately described as the British imperial financial system. And that system, which has increasingly taken over after the death of FDR and made a major move toward destroying the United States in 1971, is now bankrupt. One point Mr. LaRouche made very clearly today in discussion was, look, this is not a question of giving people in the United States or any place else a choice between the British system of finance and the American system of credit, because the British system of finance is going to collapse. They cannot win, but they can bring us down with them. So this system has lawfully come to the point of utter collapse, despite the fact that they have looted whole continents such as Africa and others, despite the fact that they depend on what even the United States Office of Drugs and Crime or something like that, I forget what it is. It's a United Nations entity which supervises and attempts to deal with the global criminal activity of the drug trade, the arms trade, and so forth. They estimate at least $800 billion in the illicit drug trade internationally. And this goes into the banks. This has been holding up the bankrupt banks for a good number of decades now. Despite all this, they're going bankrupt. They're going under. And what's happening in the European crisis, banking crisis that is now consuming the financial community, is that this grouping and its hired mouths in the European Central Bank and other places is saying that we have to supersede national governments. And even if the national governments don't want to bail out their banks, they have to bail out their banks, because it's in the general interest of Europe, i.e. the European banking system and the InterAlpha group, for them to hawk the welfare of their population to bailing out these banks. So it's come to a decision point, which is why Mr. LaRouche issued this declaration of war. There's a showdown going on between those who are now openly saying that we will supersede national governments and their ability to protect their population. We will replace governments with what these sophists call governance. In other words,
it's like the UN speak, right?
Yeah, UN governance. Speak, but it basically means the welfare of the markets and the global financial interests. So this is what is going on. And it just so happens that at this, just about a month ago, EIR, which has reproduced the Dope Incorporated book, was able to get it reprinted in hard copy by some grouping called Progressive Press, and that this book represents and has always, from its publication, represented a major explosive expose of British financial power globally. That's what is in there. It is, the British went crazy when LaRouche brought it out, claiming he was anti-Semitic. I mean, he has a picture of the Union Jack on the front, not a picture of a Jew. That was just a total fraud. We actually caught the people who were setting up the fraud, exposing it in their own words. They've been totally freaked out because it puts the spotlight on the fact that the British imperial financial system exists. It's criminal. It's out to destroy nations, the minds of the world population, and all for the sake of not prosperity or even their prosperity, but their power, their imperial power over the world. So it's very timely that we are able to go to the public out there who is listening to this, we hope, to say not only join us in this war, which the LaRouche Political Action Committee is leading as a political force, the only political force with an alternative, but we also, from the EIR side, can tell you, can offer you this book, which costs $25, and which you can get by going to the www.larouchepub.com, going to our either the cover of the book, which is on the front page, or the store, and ordering right away, because we have a limited number, actually. We want to sell them out right away, because this is what's needed as ammunition for the war to actually sink the British financial interests, or the Inter-Alpha group, so-called.
Thank you, Nancy, and I'm going to give the phone number a couple times. Many listen to this archived. They can go to where you say or by telephone message line.
Right.
And so it's 1-800-278-3135. And I'll repeat it. It's 800-278-3135. Now, there's many aspects of what you just laid out we can come back to. But let's turn to Houston. And there, Juliet and Mamo have been leading the charge in organizing for people to understand this, know the enemy, and also have ways of defeating him besides expose or comprehension, is going ahead with what's death to the enemy, the kind of Glass-Steagall principle approach to the world of not having this zombie speculative dope-based I can't call it banking financial activity, but having credit systems for projects. So why don't you go ahead and give an overview in any way you wish, either Juliet or Mamo.
Well, I think that the same thing that you see happening in Europe, where the British are, and not really, I mean, it's not sneaky at all, really, what they're doing. They're convincing nations, and have been for a long time, that they just need to basically take on this debt and then disappear, disintegrate, not even have a nation anymore. And that's definitely what's very clear in the population right now, at least the organizing that we've been involved in. It's very clear that people recognize that the budget cuts that are now coming down the line mean the disintegration of our nation. And if we accept the rule of a bunch of fictitious paper, fictitious values, if we accept that fate, then we're giving up something really human. We're actually giving up our, we're giving up our future completely. And so definitely the NWAPL organizing has been sort of the only, it is a clear alternative to destruction. And it, it meets right away all of the different things that might come up where people think questions like how do you pay for it or something. It just, it comes across right away that that being a citizen is thinking about reality in terms of how are we going to build a future for the next generation. And that's what's important, and that's our Constitution. So when we start from there in this crisis, we've had a real explosion with the NWAPL organizing, both on the campuses and then also into various layers, construction firms, engineering firms, professors on campuses, farmers, all different types of people. The crisis puts them in a position to be able to immediately grab onto this as a mission and to organize their networks around it and to put in whatever they can as far as helping us develop the picture more and more for the population.
Right. Now, of course, and you're strategically, geographically located, shall we say. I'm glad you can be on to describe this in the North American Water and Power Alliance territory, meaning directly affected from Alaska, Western Canada, down in the whole western part of the states, but down into Mexico. And you have also Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas. You've had quite a echelon of people who over the decades, as long as they're still around, were trying to do something in the past, dry land agriculture or desalinate water. So you find there's a big, from what we see in Arizona, from people working there in these specialties, there's from the what's been made available on the LaRouche Political Action Committee site. You, this is the tremendous response you're talking about. Could you go into some of that?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And maybe Memo has something to add at any point. But what there was a trip taken by Tarana and Nick from over in L.A., and we're going to be taking a trip soon from Texas heading out to New Mexico, so we're kind of going to intersect or meet them at the border there. To cover the whole Southwest region. But what they did, and also there'll be a lot coming up in terms of agriculture in Texas, and we'll have reports for that soon. But what they did from LA is they went to Tucson and Phoenix, and they printed out all the department heads, all the lists of department names and numbers from these universities there, and called through them. And just basically said, we're with LaRouche PAC. We're pushing this project, this North American Water and Power Alliance. We want to build it this year, you know, this winter. And we want to know, there's all kinds of questions. You know, they described the project a little bit. You've got, this is the biggest water project ever conceived by man. It would involve transforming the entire continent by tapping into a certain water cycle that right now is just a lot of the water is just running off of Alaska and the Yukon right into the Pacific. So the idea is to divert that all the way down through the Rockies, building bigger dams than we've ever built, using the Rocky Mountain Trench, a 50-mile-long trench as a giant reservoir, and just doubling the water available in the United States, plus extra rainfall and so forth that you'd get out of out of it. But so you just, we'd call these places and give them just a taste, just a little sort of intro of the project and say, you know, this is what we're doing. We want to do it. And we know that there's a lot of questions that are going to come up. And so we'd like to talk to you. Do you have 30 minutes or an hour to meet and talk about what you think about this project? And people were either right away very receptive or just, you know, I don't have time. Get away from me, you big dreamer, you know, kind of guy. But yeah, it's very night and day, and we'd make sure to get them to talk about what they do and what their research involves most recently. They really like talking about that. And then we'd get a good idea, too, from that exactly how they might fit in terms of helping us fill out the picture for the website and also not just the website, of course, but really this whole time we're thinking about finding those people that are actually going to build the WAPA. And so there were a few meetings set up initially. They drove 8 hours out to Arizona. And out of those meetings, sort of naturally, you'd have, you know, hey, can we record this? Is that okay for our website? A lot of people said sure. And then also right away we were getting tips to go talk to other professors, you know. Hey, you know, you really need to talk to so-and-so in irrigation, for instance. A lot of that type of collab sort of leads going on right away. So they had 7 meetings and so forth out of that.
Well, let me ask you here, Memo may comment on this too, to follow that up, that among the institutions of the country, you have Texas A&M, Agriculture and Mechanics. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that's an Abraham Lincoln legacy from these land-grant colleges. And Keisha Rogers, and I understand you were a team, was there recently. But in Texas, I guess you had the same kind of differentiated response. But one thing I wanted to ask you in that regard, Mr. LaRouche, well, Nancy can add more to this if she wants to, but is saying we know we're a minority in the United States, and people look at us from abroad as a very precious minority, do or die. But the cultural tradition of the country is Texas A&M, is agriculture and mechanics, is science and industry and agriculture. So are you finding people will reconnect? Is the reflex there, or what's it like this week when you were there?
Well, the response that we're getting is that it makes, like, for example, the engineers that know about this project get it. They intuitively know why it needs to get done. They know it's feasible. They know its benefits. For example, one of the professors at Texas A&M had, he was asking why we were not trying to lobby Congress, why we weren't beginning with the political layers.
Did you laugh out loud?
Yeah, we're laughing here, but
yeah,
that's
right.
Go ahead.
Exactly. Well, he knew that was a silly question. We said, look, they don't understand economic policy. They don't understand why this NWAPA project needs to get built and implemented. And we just simply described to him why we were going after him, and why is it that the engineers looks at the project and says, yeah, it's feasible, it makes sense, and why they need to become. And the exciting thing is that we're finding is that they are the people that they are the ones that are picking up the political fight. They're the ones that we're recruiting engineers and scientists. And the exciting thing is that we're creating a lot of it's almost like there's beginning to be a foundation set, which is really beginning to build on that foundation with second, third, fourth layers of people that recognize some of their colleagues and on our website. And we had this, for example.
You're real if you're on TV.
Yeah,
that's
see.
Great, though.
What was funny is this was the case in the Arizona organizing, where one of the professors said he saw one of the interviews and he recognized the interview with Dr. Chang. And that, which is posted on the LPAC website, he noticed Dr. Chang and said, "Oh, I've been working with him for decades. And he knew Dr. Chang, and they've been collaborators for decades. And so there's, that's just
this
one
is a,
example.
Dr. Chang was in California, so.
Right.
Right. And so they, and they both happen to be also members. If I remember correctly, the guy from Arizona, the professor from Arizona, is a member of the American Society of Civil Engineers, which Dr. Chang also, I think, right. is also a member of. So you also have, that's just one example of the cross-firing that's going on. And but the exciting thing is that, that's the kind of thing which can increasingly become more and more dynamic, where you're going to, the discussion develops, and you're going to be able to, from that discussion, from the initial discussion that was begun about a couple months ago with the NOAAPA project, the initiative that we took on, it's beginning to take a life of itself. It's just beginning to go places, and the more material we have, the more we're going to be able to get the engineering community to really take on a political fight. And this NOAAPA project is exciting because, I mean, it does address the cultural pessimism that's taken a hold of a lot of people in just the last few decades. But something which NOAAPA does represent the best traditions of what the United States really represents, the tradition of Kennedy, tradition of FDR, and I think that's what we're tapping into, and that's what's, in a sense, blooming and coming back to life through our outreach efforts.
Well, let me ask you one thing. Texas has also had a element of the T. Boone Pickens. He's a special case in some ways, but in what the InterAlpha Group has deployed, this greenism, this sick environmentalism, organized pessimism to support their devastation policies, do you find anyone's torqued on campus? Have you run into people that thought they were environmentalists and then really had to rethink that because of NOAAPA?
Well, it's there. I mean, the academic world is unfortunately filled with this whole greeny ideology. But the funny thing is that from the sense that I'm getting from the reports is that these professors have a stronger inclination for these kinds of projects. They recognize the overall good. They recognize the overall benefit of a NOAAPA project. But then there's all these other little factors that become nagging voices almost, mm-hmm. or sometimes even just the wrong, just a slight, maybe a little perspective that could be approved. For example, one of the perspectives of creating agricultural land definitely resonates strongly with these professors. They like the idea mm-hmm. of having water come down to the Southwest Desert to create more agriculture. But then the problem comes, well, they don't think that agriculture, that the produce or the benefits of agricultural land should be used to feed people. They think they can increase the biofuels. You can increase
really?
The use of
oh,
corn for biofuels.
Goodness.
That's just something slightly off.
Slightly off, yeah.
Slightly off, but nonetheless, there's something there that's still, you know, in support of the project, but we'd have to essentially crush the greening ideology. But I think that will come as an effect of having the project done. I think a lot of these things will be seen for how foolish they really are once the project takes off.
You know, I was thinking that I was about another aspect of this in terms of the which brings in the dope angle as well, which is, you know, you're right there, not so far from the Mexican border, and part of the part of the crisis that's felt there is the takeover of these international drug cartels, which are not just spawned from the population. They are a lawful result of the British Empire's organizing of the international drug trade, the banking next layer of organization of that. And then, of course, the looting of the real physical economy, which leaves millions of people on the scrap heap scrambling to try to get a job, even if it's with a drug boss or something like that. And I know that in our organizing in Mexico, for example, they have painted a very strong contrast and alternative for the population, which is, you know, talk about pessimism in the United States. They're completely in shock down there about the degree to which Dope Inc. has taken over the country, of saying, well, look, you know, what kind of, you could have a totally different future. And your actual future lies with NWAPA as against what the British financial empire has created for you, which is this drug hell. Do you find that as a resonance and a real point of intervention on the U.S. side of the border as well?
Well, I think the thing that, I mean, if you look at the political environment that we're in, if you look at the political climate where people are very, very pissed off, they're very frustrated, they're very angry, confused, upset, and as we've seen in the recent results with the elections, most people didn't really know exactly what they were voting for. They had more of a sense of what they were voting against.
Sure.
And I think that with that, the real issue becomes getting the population to understand, to begin to get a sense of the science of economics, the science of physical economics, as Lynn has become the leader for and the spokesman of in these times that we're in, and that the issues of all the other social issues, all the other problems that have arisen out of the fact that we've had a breaking socioeconomic situation, the fact that we've had an economy breaking down, all these other things will, in a sense, become a little bit, will be cleared up by getting people to understand what real economics is and being for that, not so much being against this and against that, and then constantly being in a state of just reaction and finding the population in that kind of mode of operating, which they're always reacting to against something. But I think that's why this NWAPA project is very crucial at a moment like this, because you're giving people something very powerful to be for. We're giving them the ability and the opportunity to be fighters for something and not so much just reactionary against all the things that get tossed their way and thinking that that's the only thing they have to choose from. They have to choose from a lesser of two evils or something. But that with an infrastructure project, with what NWAPA addresses, it addresses the core of the problem, which is this oligarchical philosophy imposed on the United States, which is not even intrinsic to the Constitution. It's not embedded in the cultural tradition of the United States, something recent. And so with NWAPA, I think that's the kind of thing that's why we know it's important. We know that what we're doing is addressing that issue, and not just so much something practical, but something which could change the whole identity of a society. And so, I don't know if that was helpful, but
the identity, definitely is what needs to be changed. The identity of the average American right now, and it will be transformed when we build NWAPA, when like the shovels are in the ground and all that, because now everyone is necessary. Everyone's creative mind is going to be needed. But right now it's already changing the identity of those people that decide to take responsibility for the future, which is the missing, sort of the big gaping hole in this last election and political life in the United States before now. where people just didn't have the policy, but also just didn't have the stamina or whatever you want to call it to actually decide to fight.
I think Lynn's called it the guts.
Stamina. Yeah, right.
And it is so scary. The alternative is so scary right now that it's quite the ennobling challenge to say to somebody, whether it's a student who has, you know, who doesn't know anything about anything that's not in front of their nose, mm-hmm. Or somebody who has a little bit of a better idea of how a physical economic process works, of how we actually take care of the future. To pose a challenge to anyone right now to take responsibility for it, because it is so clear that we're at the end right now. We get to choose.
Let me just throw in one thing here. Besides the phone number, I'll mention again, for I urge people who are listening to this, say, even in the archives or the telephone message line, I'm going to give you the phone again, to get these books, get many of them, and figure out who you're going to give them to. It's Christmas. No, I'm just kidding. Or if we're going to have anything like that. But today, throwing in what you said about resuming the idea that a citizen would take responsibility of the future, not just be reactive. Today is Sovereignty Day in Argentina, I just learned.
Oh.
It's called that, and Cristina Kirchner called it that, and apparently the British and some of the other networks are really aggravated about this because this is the first ever national holiday called Sovereignty Day, November 20th, and what it commemorates is in 1845, the British, with the French at the time, were sailing up the Paraná River, demanding that rivers internal to Argentina should be accessible to, namely, international marauders like the French and the British. And so there was a pitch battle. There's a figure in Argentine history, Juan Manuel de Rosas, huh. And Cristina Kirchner honored him today, and that's, excuse me, pissing everyone off.
Wow. Well, that's exactly the period of the first Opium War, where Britain was, expressing their imperial nature by, killing millions of Chinese after having militarily defeated the emperor and insisted on free trade in dope, right? Which is precisely, that's the global empire in its physical military power. What people have to face now is that we're dealing with a global empire which is based, which holds its power because people continue to believe in money and kowtow to the power of money, which is, corrupt to the absolute core.
Actually, that's what it's, I had, is one of the things I wanted to bring up to any of you, because that is how much in this period of people seeing things disintegrate around them, and it's always put after a locality, a town, a water district or something, it's practically laid everyone off, and then they're supposed to do more because it didn't balance the budget.
Right.
That they're, even for Americans who've been reactive, it is a new situation to relate to, and I'll just throw this in. Harley Schlanger, who you know is our co-host of this program, and you know him well personally, he's based in Houston, he's the Western States spokesman for Lyndon LaRouche. He's been for a few weeks in Europe, and he spoke in Dresden a couple days ago, and the interview you can see with him, actually he was interviewed on LaRouche Political Action Committee, but at one point he said to people in Germany, he said, well, that's the issue is how are the American people going to respond? And you, Memo and Juliet, you've just been talking about that. But on what Nancy raised about this disease of monetarism, do you find any shift or any people finally being able to leap out of it? I know you've been talking about their response to the idea of resuming infrastructure building again, the North American Water and Power Alliance. But when you're talking about shutting down practically towns, and farmers are in turmoil because you can't farm when the prices are going way up and way down. Do you see any reaction here or shift in what people's response is?
Well, that's the interesting thing that comes up, and I can say this, maybe Juliet has gotten similar responses, that actually does, at this point, the question of financing becomes somewhat of a stumbling block, because it's still assuming that this thing would get done under this current monetary system, that becomes the biggest stumbling block, is that it's seen from a practical standpoint. It's always seen from, well, we don't even have enough money to get all these other things done. We don't have money for funding, there's just not enough money to fund all these great things, and this project is way too expensive. And that then becomes the question that at that point really does become on what our system is, first of all, the American system of political economy, a credit system, and the intention to have an economy here in this country not be ran by monetary considerations, that you don't dictate that policy in the future is never dictated by some immediate monetary consideration. And that from that standpoint, Glass-Steagall obviously is something absolutely central and crucial for people to understand and comprehend what it actually, the principle of it, and what the effects will be in freeing up the economy for these kinds of projects, these infrastructure projects, for all sorts of projects that promote growth and benefit. And that with the Glass-Steagall legislation, you're essentially going to have a wipeout of all the things that, of all the fictitious debt, of all the financial speculation, all the gambling that we've taken on as obligations, that just goes out, that gets wiped out, and that you're no longer, that you, I mean, first of all, people would have to come to some realization that the only reason that happened, the reason we ended up in this financial crisis, is because we've adopted to the extreme form a monetary system in which everything has become dominated by a monetary system. And if everything gets dominated more and more by the monetary system, you really are saying that everything's being ran by those that control the monetary system, the financiers, the Inner Alpha Group. And so it does become a stumbling block. And I think that's where getting people more and more to see what the true credit system is, what the American system, its uniqueness, what it represents, and how we have so many historical examples of that. You know, the TVA, the Apollo program, Transcontinental Railroad, to demonstrate that really is our tradition, and to inspire people to fight for it.
Let me interject here the way I would think would be very useful to approach this. You know that Mr. LaRouche's key intervention in the recent period has very much been to appeal to the fact that we are in a patriotic war. Basically, we're in a new patriotic war. And people have to mobilize themselves for this patriotic war. People do have to have an idea of what the future will be, which you're talking about very eloquently. They also have to understand that we're dealing with a British enemy, that it's the British enemy controlling that financial system who have to be defeated. I mean, after all, so you mentioned Glass-Steagall. You know, we can never say too often that the British, as we got a direct evidence of, were directly involved in sending messages to the administration here last spring that they saw the implementation, re-implementation of Glass-Steagall as an act of aggression against Great Britain. They are absolutely opposed to it. They see it as a destruction of their financial power, which in fact it would be. So you've got, it's got to be very clear in our minds and in the minds of everybody that we're organizing that there's a foreign power at work here. There's a foreign power controlling our monetary system. That's why you can have 2 years of an administration which promised jobs and, you know, and the jobless rate has doubled since they've been in office, you know, and the country is disintegrating, literally disintegrating, because British finance is the primary consideration. With the hyperinflationary policy, with the banks being stuffed with money, but nothing happening for the physical economy, it being looted. Secondly, the Afghan war, right, which... Keisha made in her campaign for Congress, made a very big deal of it. It's extremely important for everybody because they're now talking about extending this war past 2015. I mean, Obama had this big election pitch. They were going to
withdraw
by the end of 2011, supposedly to help him with his reelection. Now, you know, they're being open about the fact that they're not only going with that extension, but also potentially for other wars, for example, Netanyahu against Iran. But this is British policy. What is Afghanistan? It's a ongoing, perpetual war to destroy the United States the way the United States was destroyed in Vietnam. It's been longer than Vietnam. We've been there. And it's the biggest opium producer in the entire world, which is a source of poison flowing, you know, extremely dangerously and destructively into Russia, into Europe, and so forth. This is 90% of the world's opium and heroin, which is coming out of there, and it's British protected. The British have, in fact, control the Obama administration, have prevented any significant crackdown, even despite a few noises here and there, and are using this to destroy populations. This is how you get populations to submit. And so you've got the British behind this hyperinflationary, destroy the United States financial policy. You've got the British behind where we are losing our sovereignty. I mean, LaRouche made this point very clear earlier this week in the weekly report. This is not a question of just Ireland about to lose its sovereignty through the British and European Central Bank imposition of conditions which force the Irish government to bail out the Interalpha Imperial Doping banks, but every country, for example, us here, are to be, and as is being proposed by these so-called fiscal commissions, you know, the American population are to be eliminated as a factor. The government of the people, by the people, and so forth, is to be subsumed by the necessity to pay off debt to these banking systems. And thirdly, you've got from the British Empire, a cultural determination that is reflected in the drive for drug legalization. Fortunately, the big one was defeated in California this last election, but it's everywhere pervasive. You guys are young, you know the culture that you're dealing with when you're dealing with people under 25, under 30. This is a culture which is dominated increasingly by what we took off with the 68er generation: rock, drugs, sex, counterculture, heavy on the drugs. Why? You know, in order to literally prevent people from being able to think. So the point I just want to underscore is the question of the enemy. We cannot lose the in the course of our mobilizing people to do the good, what the enemy is doing here, who the enemy is. It is our traditional British enemy. They're out to destroy the United States. They've come damn close. They're going for the blow of trying to eliminate the nation state entirely everywhere, not just the United States, China, Russia, and so forth. And our job at this point is to be very clear on the fact of what the principles of a combination of nation states to defeat this looks like, but also to be very clear as to who the enemy is and what has to be defeated at this point. And in that regard, as I have was anxious to point out from the very beginning of this show, I would reiterate again, the Dope Ink book can play a very useful role. Lyndon LaRouche references that as one of our major contributions to explaining and educating the American people in his latest paper, which is in the Executive Intelligence Review, The Destruction of the Destruction of the Destruction, and also referenced it again today in his talk with colleagues, emphasizing that this expose, which was an in-depth historical revelation to many, many people, made it clear that to the British Empire that we in the LaRouche movement were their major enemy. We were the guys who had the ideas that could defeat them. We were the guys who were totally committed to not to being, you know, in your face to mobilize the American idea against the British imperialism, which is trying to take the whole world down at this point.
Yeah, that hit a political nerve, so to speak, of the ages. I mean, of the successor of the Roman Empire and what preceded the Roman Empire. It was an amazing, we could go into stories, but we'll spare you now of the reaction at the time. I'm going to repeat the phone number, 800-278-3135. If you like to order by phone, many do, 800-278-3135. And you can buy more than one.
Yes.
And put it to use, especially in this excuse for what's called a Congress, not to lobby them, but to hit them over the head. This is so British, as you're saying. It's so hanging out there. Nancy, you mentioned, the whole nation state system on the line. Was it the head of the European Central Bank, Mr. Trichet, who he used the expression?
Yes, he's the one who said we can't deal with the current situation through governments. We need a new system of what he called governance, which he meant that nations such as Ireland have to subordinate themselves to maintaining the so-called viability of the global financial system. And this has just openly been talked about all over the press in Europe now. Even Angela Merkel, who is clearly under the Chancellor of Germany, clearly under a tremendous amount of pressure from sections of her Christian Democratic Union party to try to defend the nation. Because every once in a while she comes up with a policy that flies in the face of the British in a very sharp way. For example, a number of months back, putting a limit in Germany against a certain kind of speculation called short sales, which the ECB went crazy. You're not supposed to do this by yourself as a sovereign nation. You're supposed to do it, consult with us. You're supposed to let us bankers take control. And just yesterday, she also made another comment to the effect that there's a certain tension here between whether the politicians, i.e. the governments, are going to control things or the bankers are going to control things. And that, of course, really puts it directly to the point where people such as Trichet, who are little Nazis for the British Inter-Alpha group and their and which includes the dope ink banks as well, she has just, expressed a certain resistance, even though generally she hasn't mobilized her population to do that effectively, but it nonetheless clarifies the issue. What is the case is that Ireland is still fighting. Ireland has refused so far to submit.
Good.
They are traditional enemies of the British Empire, and they, they hate the British for everything that they've done to them over decades. And the this fight is still going. And what Mr. LaRouche called for this morning was, in effect, a solid block in support of Ireland, in order to rally the opposition to British imperialism and then proceed with the principle implementing the Glass-Steagall principle on a global scale, in nations all around the world, and proceeding from that Glass-Steagall implementation to rebuilding the economy on the basis of actually physical economic principles that have only been carried out in full and enunciated by the American system of political economy.
Right, and I refer people again to this statement. It's dated November 19th by Lyndon LaRouche. To use that, it's on the LaRouchePAC.com website. Sync the Inter-Alpha Group, with a summary of 6 points of what we have to do, as been described by Memo and Juliet and Nancy. And we only have a few minutes left, but I, by the way, just add what you're saying about Ireland is holding out. The British Broadcasting Corporation, BBC, which has infiltrated the U.S. deeply, keeps saying in its world news, and Ireland's going to yield soon. And Ireland's going to, and Ireland is going to yield soon. They've been saying that for 4 days, but we won't use bad language to say what our response is on the air. But back to Texas again in the final time, Memo or Juliet, if you want to add anything, too, you were the first people I think we've had since we had Mr. LaRouche on. Well, we referred people on the Saturday LaRouche show to listen to Mr. LaRouche's webcast on November, the one that was after the elections. Mm-hmm. And if you want to say anything about the international, national, or in her district following of Keisha Rogers in terms of mobilizing, what you have in mind, what people's reactions are. You said you're going to have a foray into New Mexico, but what are you broadly trying to reach all layers, or is there some special connection to the population you're finding responsive or trying to reach out to?
Well, I believe that Mr. LaRouche said this after the election. I could be wrong, but we'll see what he thinks about it. But that Keisha represents. Oh yeah, yeah. The effect of the election and what we're doing in Houston is international, mm-hmm. and that Keisha is an international leader. And the NAWAPA project also is an international. It represents an international switch to a credit system. World development. And we've gone through a lot of pains, I guess enjoyable pains, to to get videos, material out, and research done on various projects, water projects, power projects, resource development, transportation. These projects taken as an integral whole throughout the planet. There's projects on the books in Asia, Africa, the Darien Gap, and more to be filled out. But we do have the global perspective, and that's exactly what we need to defeat the global enemy and put a replacement in, put a sane economic policy, a human economic policy in place immediately. And so there's no real bounds to who we can reach out to in this period and who we need to reach out to.
Well, that's the best way to end this hour of discussion, which whizzed past with this voice from Houston, Houston to the planet. and beyond. And thank you very much, Juliet Lamoureux and Guillermo Granados and Nancy Spanis. And this is Marcia Mary Baker for November 20th, 2010, ending the LaRue Show. November 27th, do listen, among others, and breaking news on this war. We're going to have, I think, Portia Torombo-Street on speaking about Africa and other developments internationally. Thank you very much.
Thank you.